Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today, we open our show with some top national news stories breaking from Public News Service, including a congressional deal to avoid a government shutdown, at least until March, abortion bills introduced by congressional Republicans, why efforts to keep Donald Trump off ballots in several states under the Insurrection Clause have been delayed, and a blistering report from the Justice Department on the Uvalde school shooting. Locally, there's a major storm moving into the San Diego region, bringing heavy rain, strong winds, and other hazards. La Mesa City Council has approved an ordinance regulating tobacco retailers. Then on People Power, hear how Pine Valley's postmaster rescued two runaway horses, giving new meaning to the term Pony Express. From California News Service, hear how education funding fared in the latest round of state budget cuts to shore up a deficit. The County of San Diego has announced a new program to provide housemates for seniors, matching homeowners with older residents in need of a room for modest rent or trade for services. On Crime Beat, a homeless woman has been arrested for starting a fire that caused major damage to multiple garages in unincorporated El Cajon. The County Water Authority is warning of scammers posing as utility workers while they case homes for potential robberies. Spring Valley's Community Planning Group needs volunteers to fill vacancies. San Diego County's animal shelters are overcrowded, and they need people to adopt or provide foster homes for pets, especially dogs. We'll have details on how you can help. On Bookshelf, Raina Menashe interviews author Ken Schaefer on his newest book, An Otherwise Perfect Plan. The California Utilities Commission has rejected a plan to help ratepayers replace gas appliances with electric ones. Find out why on our show today. And finally on Ready, Set, Grow, Master Gardener Connie Beck shares common mistakes that homeowners make when planning their gardens. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This is what the American people want to see. Both sides working together and governing responsibly. No chaos, no spectacle, no shutdown.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says he hopes to see even more bipartisanship now that Congress is funding federal agencies into March and avoiding a shutdown. Half of House Republicans joined Democrats in passing the stopgap. That's frustrating for the right-wing Freedom Caucus, which complains continuing resolutions enable more spending and do nothing to control immigration. Republican Eli Crane represents Arizona.
Congress considers no budgets, legislation never hits against cost limitations, and every bipartisan disagreement is solved simply by spending more on the pet programs of the opposing party.
House Republicans approved a pair of anti-abortion bills Thursday, one day before the annual March for Life rally in Washington. Massachusetts Democrat Ayanna Pressley says the measures aim to mislead about services on college campuses and at so-called crisis pregnancy centers, which try to guide the unknowing away from abortion.
Republicans are continuing their politically violent, thinly veiled misinformation campaign to ultimately enact a national abortion ban.
A judge in Washington state is rejecting an effort to block former President Donald Trump from the ballot. A citizen group challenged Trump's eligibility under the 14th Amendment bar on insurrectionists in office. School teacher Frankie Ithaca says the clear text of the Constitution disqualifies him.
I have to live by what I teach in the classroom and how I run my classroom. And this was part of that.
Meanwhile, a Maine judge has put Trump's ballot status there on hold until the U.S. Supreme Court rules on a similar Colorado case. And a new brief filed by Trump darkly warns disqualification promises to unleash chaos and bedlam nationwide. The court is scheduled to hear the case in 3 weeks. A Justice Department report details numerous police failures during the elementary school shooting in Uvalde, Texas. Children and staff were trapped with the killer for more than an hour with officers outside. 19 students and two teachers died. Attorney General Merrick Garland says they deserved better.
We hope to honor the victims and the survivors by working together to try to prevent anything like this from ever happening again, here or anywhere.
Women remain underrepresented in city offices nationwide, but not in St. Paul, Minnesota. The state capital is making history as the first large American city to elect an all-female city council with a supermajority of women of color. Council President Mitra Jalali says their top priorities are affordable housing, climate action, and public safety.
Today is a day I invite you to remember change begins at home. This council should give everyone a reason to hope.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The National Weather Service is forecasting a major storm bringing widespread rain countywide, with thunderstorms possible in San Diego's mountains, valleys, and coastal areas. The storm is also expected to bring gusty winds, grapple, which is similar to hail, and lightning that could pose hazards to those outdoors. Heavy rains could create slick road conditions and ponding, so use caution if you're driving. Up to an inch of rain is forecast in many areas, with over 2 inches in our mountains. The storm is slated to hit our region starting Saturday, January 20th, with the heaviest rain expected Monday and Tuesday. Along the coast, high surf is forecast with waves up to 7 feet. This could create rip currents, hazardous to swimmers. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The La Mesa City Council has adopted a new ordinance that requires retailers to have a license to sell tobacco products. The ordinance passed unanimously during the January 9th council meeting on Councilmember Jack Hsu's motion to adopt. With the new law, La Mesa joins fellow East County City El Cajon in enacting a tobacco retail licensing program geared towards reducing youth tobacco use. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, 12.6% of all high school students in 2023 used tobacco products, including over 14% of high school girls and 11% of high school boys. La Mesa's new ordinance has provisions for compliance, including the use of underage decoys to enforce local, county, state, and federal laws prohibiting sale of tobacco to minors. Failure to comply with the new law can result in permanent revocation of the license after 4 infractions over 3 years. A first infraction results in a $1,000 fine. A second offense results in a 60-day suspension of the license. And the third occurrence can result in a year-long suspension. Retailers will also be subject to criminal and civil prosecutions, in addition to the licensing provisions, according to the ordinance. The law goes into effect 30 days from the date of adoption, and operationally, it will be enforced 90 days after that. Reporting for East County Magazine from La Mesa, this is John Tidwell.
This is East County Magazine's People Power, profiling local people making a positive difference in our community and our world.
This is Miriam Raftery with a People Power report. Pine Valley Postmaster Jesse Rose Hoffman and a customer heroically teamed up to rescue a pair of runaway horses, prompting gratitude from the horses' owners and members of the community. Hoffman and a customer noticed the two riderless horses galloping across the post office parking lot in mid-January. Just a few minutes earlier, the postmaster had seen a woman and a young girl riding those same horses in a meadow near the post office. Hoffman says, "My first thought was, oh no, where are the riders?" followed quickly by, "I need to go help." Hoffman and her customer ran out of the office after the horses, catching up to them at a Frosty Burger down the road. They walked the horses back to the post office just in time to see the horses' grateful riders walking out of the meadow without any serious injuries, although they were in some pain after being thrown by their horses. They explained that the horses had been spooked by a remote control car. Watching their horses gallop away, the riders feared that the animals could run onto the nearby freeway on-ramp where they could be injured or worse. Hoffman and her customer offered to ride the horses back to the still-shaken owners' homes just a few blocks away. As they rode away from the post office parking lot, some customers shouted, "Look, the postmaster is bringing back the Pony Express." But this ride delivered community service, not mail. Hoffman concludes, "When we ran out of the office, we had no idea where the horses were or how this incident would end. I'm glad that we were able to catch up with the horses and that their riders turned out okay. Although it's not part of her postal duties, Hoffman says her actions reflect her commitment to her customers and to the entire Pine Valley community.
Education advocates in California say they're breathing a sigh of relief after higher ed was spared big cuts in Governor Gavin Newsom's new budget proposal. The governor's office is projecting a $38 billion budget deficit, which it says will be resolved through a mix of reserve funds and budget trimming. Jesse Ryan is executive vice president of the Campaign for College Opportunity.
Governor Newsom's budget proposal really upholds his commitment to maintaining investments in K-12 and in higher ed. The budget proposal largely protects students from devastating cuts.
The budget does, however, cut a loan program designed to help universities and colleges build more affordable student housing, and it reduces the middle-class scholarship funding by $289 million. Newsom's proposal also does not include funds for the Cal Grant Equity Framework, which would have given an extra 150,000 low-income students access to Cal Grants. Ryan says the cost of college is a huge obstacle for many families.
Families are questioning the value of college. An expansion of financial aid funding would have been a really important tool to provide low-income first-generation students and students of color with some certainty that college is within reach.
Newsom's proposal also cuts a $300 million state contribution to a new immunology research facility planned at UCLA. Legislators will now start negotiating and must pass a balanced budget by June 15th. Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
County supervisors have approved a pilot program to create housemate matches between lower-income older adults and local residents with a spare bedroom. The 2-year pilot program was created to address growing homelessness among older adults. The 2023 point in time count revealed that the number of older adults, ages 55 and older, experiencing homelessness increased by 29% from the prior year. The program will match at least 50 older adults, people 55 and up, with appropriate households that sign up and offer to rent out a spare bedroom. Participants also will be offered services to help them stay housed. David Estrella, Director of County Housing and Community Development Services, says, "Older adults living on a fixed income are more vulnerable to losing their home. This program is a way to catch a senior before they fall through the cracks in this challenging housing market." Now, older adults earning no more than 120% of the area median income would be eligible for the program, and they would pay no more than 30% of their total monthly income toward rent. In some cases, a service exchange could even be allowed, though not required, where the older adult provides services such as gardening or cleaning to pay reduced rent. The home must be in San Diego County and in good standing with utility, taxes, and rent or mortgage payments. Program participants will be matched with households based on goals, preferences, and lifestyles. The program includes screening and assessments. The program will be promoted through outreach in the Senior Services and Homeless community, and it's expected to launch early this summer. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, in the heart of San Diego's East County.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
A woman is behind bars on suspicion of starting a fire on January 11th at an apartment complex on East Bradley Avenue in unincorporated El Cajon. The fire engulfed 14 garages at the complex. After the sheriff asked public help to locate the suspect, who was reportedly homeless, a caller on January 14th provided information about the whereabouts of 43-year-old Mavis Williams. A deputy from the Lakeside Sheriff's substation found her nearby. She was taken into custody without incident. Williams was booked into the Las Colinas Detention and Reentry Facility on charges of recklessly causing a fire. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. Residents countywide are warned to be vigilant for imposter water agency workers knocking on doors and requesting entry to homes to test water quality or make sales pitches, the San Diego County Water Authority warns. Similar scams pop up every few years. A spate of recent incidents have been reported by several water agencies across the region, including in the city of San Diego, South County, and here in East County. The Water Authority and its 23 member agencies are not responsible for water testing or repairs inside private homes, and they rarely have reason to ask for entry. Water agencies also typically do not sell or endorse commercial products. Legitimate water agency employees are always in uniform, carry an identification badge, and they typically drive a clearly marked agency vehicle. Utility scams take many forms, including requests for bill payment with a credit card, demands that residents buy certain water treatment products, and sales pitches for waterline insurance in some cases. Imposters may go door to door. Other times, they operate by phone. The imposters may work in pairs, with one person talking to a resident while another cases the home for valuables to steal. Residents are urged to turn away anybody claiming to be a water utility employee who appears at their home without an appointment and requests to enter, solicit information, or payment. Concerns about potential fraud should be reported to the customer's local water agency. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is John Tidwell with a public service announcement for the County of San Diego's Spring Valley Community Planning Group. The Spring Valley Community Planning Group is looking for residents to fill two vacancies. The planning group advises San Diego County on planning and land use matters, such as construction projects as well as proposed changes to commercial and residential properties. The group has various county agencies present and advise its members so that the group can be constantly aware of all facets of community life in Spring Valley. Besides construction projects, the group's members learn about land use planning, law enforcement, traffic, parks, and the impacts of local, state, and federal legislation on our community. The group is a constantly updated source of all things Spring Valley. The group consists of 15 community members, and there are currently two vacant positions. Chairman Christopher Pierce says, "To function effectively, it is best to have a full slate of members to be the eyes, ears, and voice of Spring Valley regarding the wide range of topics." The Spring Valley Community Planning Area encompasses approximately 11 square miles in unincorporated San Diego County. Several neighborhoods are located within Spring Valley. Those include Bancroft, Brookside, Spring Valley, La Presa, Dictionary Hill, and Sweetwater Village. If you would like to find out more about how you can be a force for improving and protecting Spring Valley, please contact Christopher Pierce, Chair of the Spring Valley Planning Group, via email at svcpg4@gmail.com. Again, that's SV, as in Victor, CPG, the number 4@gmail.com.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org. This is Miriam Raftery with an education report. The faculty union at Cal State University is planning a week of strikes across the 23 campuses from January 22nd through 26th after the system said it would provide 5% raises to members. That's far below what the union is seeking, CalMatters reports. The California Faculty Association is asking for 12% raises this fiscal year, plus other benefits like extended parental leave and higher minimum salaries for the lowest paid workers. But the 5% is an amount that other employee unions in the system did accept last year as Cal State fought to stave off an even larger labor walkout. From Cal State's perspective, its latest and final offer concludes contract negotiations. But the faculty union has reaffirmed its plans, broadcast in December, to strike in late January, and recently walked out of negotiations. The union seeks a 12% pay raise in response to soaring inflation since 2021. An independent fact finder in December recommended that the two sides agree to a 7% raise as a compromise, but an offer of above 5% would have reopened salary negotiations with other unions because of terms agreed to in those contracts, which Cal State has wanted to avoid. Cal State, since last May, has been signaling that its finances are rocky. The system said its revenues fall $1.5 billion short of what it needs to adequately educate its students. That finding prompted the system's Board of Trustees last September to approve 5 years of consecutively escalating tuition hikes, increases totaling 34%. Those will kick in this fall, but will only affect about 40% of undergraduates. The other 60% of students don't pay tuition because they receive enough state and institutional financial aid. While those tuition hikes will bring more revenues to the system, it's not enough to fully fund Cal State's mission, senior leaders have maintained. The faculty union opposed those tuition hikes, arguing instead that Cal State has enough in reserves to afford the raises the union seeks and to spend more money on students without increasing what they're charged. Cal State has pushed back on that analysis, noting it needs to build reserves so it has the equivalent of at least 3 months of operating budget as cash on hand in case of emergencies. Currently, it's only got about a month's worth of funds, according to Cal Matters. Now, professors at Cal State earn on average between $91,000 and $122,000. Full-time lecturers average about $71,000 salary, and the 23 campus presidents, well, they have an average base salary of about $417,000, according to data compiled by CalMatters in 2022. Most lecturers are part-time and earn about $64,000. Faculty groups have railed against the higher jumps in salaries that top Cal State campus and system officials were awarded in recent years. A CalMatters analysis last month showed that while lecturers saw raises of 22% on average since 2007, campus presidents in that time saw base raises of 43% on average. The system's new chancellor earns just shy of $800,000 in base pay and about $1 million when adding housing, auto, and other perks. But even if faculty and Cal State University system resolve the current labor dispute, a wider set of contract items will be up for negotiations again this June.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
San Diego County Animal Shelters are looking for adoptive and foster families to address a problem affecting shelters throughout the United States, and that's overcrowding. County shelters have too many pets, especially dogs. A variety of factors led to this overcrowding, including a challenging economy and housing shortages for many families. This has forced some people to make the difficult decision to abandon or relinquish their beloved dogs. The rising cost of food and veterinary care is also a factor for some families. San Diego County Animal Services Director Kelly Campbell says more dogs are coming into the shelter this year than there were last year, and fewer dogs in the shelters are being adopted or reclaimed by owners. We don't want to run out of room, and we need the community's help. Adopting or fostering makes a huge difference for the animals in our care and has great benefits for those fostering or adopting. A scientific study by the American Heart Association in 2019 showed that dog owners live longer and have healthier lives than people without a dog. This is often due to the increase in physical activity from daily walks. Dogs also help people improve mental health by reducing daily stress, according to a 1991 study in the Journal of the Royal Society of Medicine. Now, last year, the County Department of Animal Services shelters took in over 5,700 animals, and more than 5,100 were adopted or returned to their owners. Housing and financial hardship were among the top five reasons why dogs were voluntarily relinquished to the shelters. The top reasons for relinquishment were death of an owner or their ability to care for the animal and too many dogs in the home. If you can adopt a dog or foster one but have been putting it off, please consider this urgent need. All dogs that have been in the shelter for more than 30 days will have adoption fees waived. If adoption is not an option, fostering is always free. Even short breaks of a few days away from the shelter environment significantly improves the health and well-being of pets. All basic care supplies, such as food, leash, and bedding, are included as part of this program. Pet owners are asked to have pets spayed or neutered to avoid pet overpopulation. County Animal Services can assist by providing low-cost referrals. People can also help with dog food donations, which Animal Services pass along to community members who need help. You can check out the pets available for adoption, learn more about fostering an animal, or volunteer at the County Animal Services Department website, formerly called the San Diego Department of Animal Control, at sddac.com or call 619-767-2675. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment.
Today I'm speaking with Ken Schaefer, author of a new young adult novel with a long title, An Otherwise Perfect Plan, a novel of mystery, love, and of chocolate that defies description. In addition to writing novels, my guest is also a screenwriter, having worked for companies such as Disney, Paramount, and ABC, on projects ranging from a prequel to Sleeping Beauty, to Star Trek, The Next Generation, and ABC Night at the Movies. And if all that isn't enough, he writes children's books, has founded Moon Jumper Press, and is the creator of Frameforge, an Emmy award-winning screenwriting software for filmmakers. Welcome, Ken Schaefer. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Hey, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Let's begin with your book and its chapter titles.
Yes.
In addition to the book's title, each chapter has its own title. So why don't you read a couple of them to give our listeners the sense of its flavor?
Okay. Chapter 4, in which I learn just enough to be driven really crazy. Chapter 5. A life without dwarves is not a tall order. Chapter 6. I'll stop after 7. In case of emergency, break glass. And in chapter 7, in which something actually goes right. And that can't be good.
My favorite was, if it wasn't my blood, then why is my heart bleeding on the floor?
Yeah. I think one of my favorite ones is in which Not Dad cracks the code and I realize yet again that I can't do believable chilled vegetable impressions.
Okay. So tell us a little bit about your process here. How do you think this stuff up? And how do you get into the heads of 12 to 18 year olds to come up with these titles, these chapters, and the whole plot?
The plot, honestly, I have no memory how I came up with it. The way I tend to work is I'll have an idea, often a scene, and then I'll sort of figure out how that fits into a larger story and kind of work backwards. I mean, with this one, the basic sort of story structure of the book is that a young girl knows nothing about her father. She's grown up, mm-hmm. and the only thing she knows is that he and her mom met in Vegas, and there's a photo strip of the two of them together. Then she was born 9 months later. So put it together. And she, for various reasons, decides that she needs to find him. And so the structure of the story is her quest for him, though it's, in my mind at least, much less about that story than it is about her perspectives on the world and the sardonic way she looks at things and questions things and mixed in with a coming of age of her realizing that... Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to give too much away, but coming of age story, you figure it out. So The real answer to your question is I started writing it when my daughter was probably about 14, 15. And a lot of things that were going on in her life, her friends' lives, and whatnot. And the combination of that and the YA books that she was introducing us to just basically came together. And I said, I can do that.
So that's why you chose a female protagonist.
Yeah. It just felt right for this. And, you know, all of her friends were girls. And so I was surrounded by teenage girls. And
oh, no.
Well, no, it actually, I mean, she was the perfect child. Not in a goody two shoes way, but we never went through the whole, I hate you. And other than her complaining that we took her places when she was too young to remember, and she hates us for that, but I can take that.
So you decided on having a 16-year-old girl for a protagonist?
Right. And then the chapter title sort of, each chapter had, you know, its own little thing, and then I basically would find something that core to that chapter, and my sort of goal with the title was to make something that sounds funny, but which you don't really know what it means until sort of the end of the chapter, the middle of the chapter, and you're like, okay, that's, you know, she can't do chilled vegetable impressions. She can't be cool as a cucumber. I get it now, you know, that kind
of thing. So did you run your chapter titles and other things past her and friends?
Oh, yes. In fact, she basically read it as a serial. So every night, I'm a vampire. I'm up till about 4 a.m. every night. And so I would do my writing every night, and in the morning she would get her new pages, and she would read them, and in many cases giggle out loud, which meant that I was on the right track. So yeah, I mean, she was my ongoing audience, and then actually a bunch of her friends, once there was a full draft, read it and gave me feedback, and a couple of them read it multiple times, and so I had a built-in source.
And I understand you showed your cover to kids that age as well.
Yeah, actually, by the time I got around to deciding to get it published and whatnot, I was struggling with the title. And I actually went back to her elementary school, which went through 8th grade, and her high school, and found English teachers who would show a series of titles and covers to their class and have a discussion about it. And they said the kids loved it, and it was really useful to me, and that's how I ended up with this title.
What a fun way to do research.
Yeah, it really was.
And this novel, so far, it's gotten really excellent reviews. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Including Kirkus's rare Get It verdict and must reads from several others, including Midwest Book Review. And the Kirkus review specifically mentioned that the book had a, quote, timeless, almost cinematic quality to the characters and story structure, unquote. Tell us about that. Do you think your screenwriting career and the software creation helped you create a novel with that kind of cinematic structure?
No. I screenwriting and novel writing are two completely different beasts. A screenplay has to be entirely visual. That as you're writing it, if you say something like, he looks at her and he knows this is the girl he's going to marry, you've done something fundamentally wrong, because there's no, I mean, how's the audience supposed to know that? Mm-hmm. You know, that you have to, that screenplays are supposed to be purely visual, such that you have dialogue, which obviously the world sees. And then you have descriptions, but they have to be completely external. You know, he gets a mysterious smile would be fine, because that's something the audience can see.
Right.
And then we have to interpret that. hopefully you've done it all well enough and the director and actors, you know, pull it together such that you've communicated everything you want to. I personally think a lot of times when motivations of actors or characters or whatnot of films are just weird, that they've, in the screenplay, they've written too much. So everybody involved goes, oh, I know why they're doing this, because you've told me, you know, he hates her, you know. Right. But if you haven't shown it, then you have a problem. You're a novelist, you know, a novel is the other side, you know, looking out. And what I struggled with as a novel is you can spend 20 minutes talking about a water droplet. And, you know, that could be great, or it could be just like, whoa, you know, you're way off in the weeds. So the one thing that may be true is that with a screenplay, that you're so tight for time that everything has to have a reason for being there.
Right.
And so I think I maybe do approach things a little differently, that I, you know, I'm much more sort of cognizant as to why I'm doing this at any given moment. Although a lot of stuff, you know, I find I do something and then later I go, oh, that's why I did that.
Well, which one do you enjoy more?
It depends. I mean, at the moment, I'm much more into the sort of novel world, and particularly with Gwen, she's so much fun to be with, as it were, that I'm really enjoying that. But I like variety. I mean, that's partly why I'm doing so many different things. So, yeah, anybody wants to hire me to write a screenplay, I'm there, you know.
Yeah. For yourself, you don't have to hire yourself, huh?
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But I've had so many things sort of almost happen with my screenwriting that it gets exhausting. Most recently, I had actually a television series set up in the UK on a script I wrote that then became a novel that then became a television series, and we got it set up, and then it was in development for 2 years and then went poof.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well, books don't quite go poof that way.
Yes, exactly. They just go thud. But
well, going back to your reviews, another one of your reviews brought up an interesting point, that you don't have any bad guys or villains or antagonists in this book, which is not the norm. To quote from the review, this book is more like real life, only funnier. The teenage heroine actually likes and appreciates her mother. Gasp. And the best friend love interest is a consistently nice guy. There's no actual villain. And even the peripheral characters are well-intentioned, the review says. So what gives with that? What made you choose
that? I actually didn't realize that until that reviewer said this.
Oh, that's funny.
And I thought, wow, that's insightful. Boy, I'm smart. I mean, in many ways, it really came out of the story in which her mother, due to a set of circumstances, which I won't reveal, you know, made a choice that had a huge amount of impact on her and, you know, a bunch of other people. It just set in motion a series of events that didn't seem to require a villain. I mean, the conflict is just getting through life, getting through the day, figuring out, you know, how are we going to solve this problem? I want to go to college, you know, whatever.
Right.
And there's sort of enough, I wouldn't say quiet conflict, but enough stress. And I mean, we all know there's enough stress in the world without actual bad people, you know, of which there are many. And, you know, your daily lives and stresses aren't particularly because necessarily somebody's, you know, a bad person. It's because you want to accomplish something and it's hard and, you know, whatnot.
Yeah.
So it wasn't something which I set out and said, yeah, I'm going to make this, you know, without a villain. Life is the obstacle, really the story. And there are good people out there who help you along the way if you let them.
Right. Right. I think that's a lot more like real life.
Yeah.
Less formulaic, I guess.
Yeah. I didn't want to just, you know, do another one of those, you know, novels. So my goal really was just to tell this story, and it came out that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a lot of fun. Tell us about the Moon Jumper Press, what that's about, and about your children's books.
Okay. Well, that, again, starts with my daughter, without whom I would be nothing. She was, as most kids, you know, in that five and earlier range, "Daddy, tell me a story! Daddy, tell me a story!"
Right.
And most of them are utterly abysmal and random and, you know, make about as much sense as telling dreams.
Yep.
But one day, I actually hit upon what I thought was what turned out to be a pretty good story, which was about a cow who each night sneaks out of the barn to listen to the farmer telling stories to his kids. And this cow is very enthusiastic and somewhat naive, and hears about the cow who jumped over the moon. So she gets all excited and she's going to try and do that. And then she, needless to say, has some difficulties accomplishing this task. Life gets in the way.
Right.
So she goes around to all the farm animals and asks the frogs, you know, how they jump. And they all give their sage advice about lily pads giving you, you know, your good bounce. And she's like, "I'm a little big for that, I think."
A little big for a lily pad.
Yeah. And she goes to the crickets and it's like, "You got to chirp when you lift off." And none of it works. And she's about to give up. And she goes and takes a drink from a stream. And there at the bottom of the stream is the moon. And so she jumps over the full moon. And my mind produces a lot of verse. I wouldn't call it quite poetry. And so I had told this story much as I told it to you just now. And then I think my wife and daughter were clothes shopping, which for men is so much fun. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there and I just started composing it in verse. "There once was a cow, a most marvelous beast, the fastest fly flicker in all the Northeast. She spent all her day in fast fly flicking fun until the sun set and the long day was done. Then she crept from her house to the barn to the house on the hill, where under the window she'd lie very still. Yes, under the window she'd settle in tight, for the farmer read books to his children each night." And it went from there. And then I ended up writing two more cow stories, and I could tell you about, but we could spend the entire conversation.
So what's the title of that first one that you wrote?
The first one is The Cow Who Conquered the Moon, and it's not yet available because I keep on noodling with the images, and I'm not an artist. So you mentioned that I actually have a software company, and we make a software program called Frameforge, which is not a screenwriting program. That's what I used to do. No worries. It's a what's called a pre-visualization program. It's for directors and cinematographers to be able to shoot in their computer exactly what the camera will see in any given set. So it's an optically accurate virtual film studio. And we have a cow in it and a frog and some other stuff. So I actually made images for this book in my filmmaking software and sort of laid it all out. But it seems a little simple to me, at least, the imagery for a children's book. And so I haven't put it out there yet because I'm not quite ready.
You said it's called?
Frameforge Studio. And it's been used on everything from Downton Abbey to Spider-Man Homecoming to there's a recent Netflix movie called something, We Have a Ghost, I think. And it was used on all seven seasons of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and and so on. And we won an Emmy for it a couple years back. and it's won other awards. So it's an interesting program because it's actually used by directors, cinematographers, and VFX supervisors, but this is an entirely different topic that we could take up the whole conversation on.
Do you think it would be useful for novelists?
Could be. I mean, basically, you can set up any scene you want in it. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, but it is really designed for shooting, you know, for creating the visual of something. It depends how people, I mean, novelists work in so many different ways that I don't want to say yes or no. I mean, it's not what it's really designed for,
right.
but certainly if it helps you visualize something and inspires you to figure out a scene, sure, why not?
I might want to try that out myself.
Sure.
Okay. One last question. What are you working on now? And when can we expect to see that in print?
Darn good question. I'm working on actually a couple things right now. I'm doing a rewrite of my first novel, which is called Greensleeves and is actually the project that was set up as a television series. And it's an adult, not adult, but not YA, historical fantasy, mixing the historical realities of the life of Edward VI, who's the son of Henry VIII, and mm-hmm. all the politics and whatnot going on there, and the contemporary mythological world. And it's entitled Greensleeves, after the song. My manager had submitted it out to a bunch of places. We actually got some semi-consistent feedback, which is rare. And I'm taking that in right now and doing a rewrite, and then it's going to go back out. I'm also working with a friend of mine on another children's book entitled A is for Ah! And it's
okay, but can you repeat that, please?
Yes. A is for it's a Halloween-themed alphabet book. And it has a bit of a story, so it's A is for Ah, which you yell at the sound of a very loud boo, though there's no one around, and goes off like that.
Okay.
She is Alexis St. John. She's an amazing artist who fortunately for her, she got a opportunity to get a master's program, to get a master's in fine arts. And has been off doing that, so she hasn't been working with me on this. So we're sort of paused that. And then I'm working on a sequel to this book, mm-hmm. Because I had a reviewer who basically said, you have to do it!
Do you have a title yet for your sequel?
Probably An Otherwise Perfect Summer.
Ah.
And it's set a year after the end of mm-hmm. this book, and if you read this book, you'll know what I'm talking about, where she is and her mom are on the island that we learn about at the end.
Spoilers.
no, that's sort of a hint, a tease, not a spoiler.
Okay.
I have, I think, a really good story idea for that, okay. though it's as yet a wee bit formless, but I'll get there. Oh, and then the big thing I'm working on right now, actually, is an audio version of this book, which I have a just wonderful, I mean, she embodies Gwen, narrator named Renee Cannon, and she's recorded the entire book, and right now we're going through and just fixing little mispronunciations and
oh, wonderful.
And things like that.
Right.
And that is probably not in print, but the thing that you're going to see soonest. So it will be available on Audible probably in maybe 2 months.
Great.
Fingers crossed. And that should be great. I mean, I had a bunch of people audition and she just was like, oh my God, she is Gwen.
Oh,
and
wonderful.
She does some really fun voices for the other characters, and I really could not be more thrilled.
I look forward to hearing it. Well, That's all fascinating. It was so nice talking with you, Ken Schaefer, but our time is up. So thank you for coming onto the show.
Thank you for having me. This has been great fun.
For more information on Ken Schaefer and his work, please visit www.kenschaefer.com, and Schaefer is spelled S-C-H-A-F-E-R. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
The California Public Utilities Commission just rejected Southern California Edison's plan to help families trade in their gas appliances for electric, drawing criticism from environmental groups. The CPUC argued that the $750 million four-year plan would have raised rates too much in the short term, but Nihal Srinath with the Sierra Club says the rebates would have taken between 25 to 75% off the cost of an electric heat pump or heat pump and water heater.
That's not taking into account the fact that these electric appliances tend to be 3 to 4 times more efficient than gas appliances, and so customers would see almost immediate positive rate impacts on their bills.
The state has set a goal to electrify 80% of buildings by 2035. When natural gas is burned, it emits methane, a potent greenhouse gas that has been linked to higher rates of asthma. SoCal Edison had plans to install more than 250,000 heat pumps and heat pump water heaters. Srinath says the Sierra Club proposed modifications that would have focused the program on low-income communities.
Right now, we're not in a great situation where we risk only affluent customers electrifying and low-income customers kind of holding the bag, so to speak, for an increasingly obsolete gas system.
People can still take advantage of other electrification rebate and incentive programs. Check the website rewiringamerica.org for information on the tax credits tied to the Biden administration's Inflation Reduction Act. And check the site switchison.org for state incentives. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is a public service announcement from East County Magazine. In these winter months, you can receive free alerts via email or Twitter on your mobile phone about emergencies such as flash floods, road closures, heavy snow, and other severe weather alerts, as well as wildfires, traffic reports, and more. You can sign up for this free public service at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Connie Beck with Ready, Set, Grow. I'm going to help you create healthy and beautiful gardens using less money, less hard work, and much more fun. I thought this time I would talk about the biggest mistakes that homemakers make. And I think one of the first ones, and I find this when I go to people's houses to do a consultation, is I ask them what their goal is. Frequently, they know. And that's awesome when they tell me, I just don't want to pay this much for water anymore, but I don't want a desert look. Those are two really good clues for me. That tells me, okay, we're going with either native or Mediterranean plants. We're going to mulch everything. We're going to put in drip irrigation. And I know where to go from there. Unfortunately, a lot of people go to the nursery before they know what their real goal is. And if you don't have a clear goal, you're not going to have a good plan for how to achieve that goal. You can't also come up with your goal and then your little sketch and your plan and then go straight to the nursery. It would be great if it was that easy. We would all love it. But you have to do the soil preparation first. You have to address the drainage issues first. And then you also have to know something about plants. At this point, if you don't own a Sunset Western Garden Book, you better get one. And you better start checking what you've come up with for a plant list. How you don't do it is you don't go to the nursery and buy everything you see that's pink, that's pretty. That doesn't work. You need to know what these plants want in the way of sun exposure, watering, how big will they grow. I have seen people plant shrubs that are going to become 10 feet tall and 10 feet wide, and they have put 8 of them in a 10 foot by 10 foot square. That doesn't work. So you need to know about the plants. You need to know water, you need to know sun or shade,
You need to know what kind of soil they like. If you're planning to have a blueberry farm, you better make adjustments ahead of time for the soil. You need not to think so much about the color of the plants, because that's one of the last considerations. You also need to plan for maintenance down the line. You need to have somebody come in and do a good job of pruning on your trees. You need to put in good mulch so that the plants will not be stressed out by too much heat. You don't want to use unrelated plant materials.
I hate it when I go to somebody's house and they tell me that they're going to hand water everything.
That doesn't work. You need an irrigation system.
You really do. If you have more than one flower bed that's very small,
put in an irrigation system. And my favorite for everything is drip irrigation of some sort. Too many accessories, a.k.a. yard art. Be careful. It can start looking very junky very quickly. Basically, if you stand there and look at an area of your yard, you shouldn't see more than one piece of yard art in that field of vision. And then the last thing I would mention, if you're doing a design-it-yourself situation, make sure people can find your front door. You should have a friendly, colorful walkway to the front door so that people don't stand there wondering which way they should go. You can do that by outlining that walkway with bright colored perennials, putting in a few landscape lights, a few, it shouldn't look like a landing strip, and then have a welcome that everybody will enjoy. You too.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. KNSJ Radio is dedicated to providing nonprofit news in the public interest, not special interests. We rely on your support to continue bringing you important stories from San Diego and East County that you won't hear anywhere else. Please make a generous donation at knsj.org to sustain KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.